We want to build a community and share other women's stories. Hi, everyone, and welcome to Tea with TE, the She Who Leads podcast. Today, we have Joanna Park, the Chief Talent Officer at ThoughtWorks. And I'm so excited to have you here, Joanna. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you. I'm honored to be here.
It's great to have you on. And in this session, we're going to talk about creating clarity from complexity, which I know is something that is true to you. And it's something that you talk about quite often and has shaped a lot of your career to date. And I'm really excited to get into this with you. So thanks so much. So in terms of just giving our listeners a bit of context, do you mind sharing a little bit about yourself and your background?
Sure, I'd love to. Maybe I'll just start at the beginning. I studied electrical engineering in college. And as I was getting closer to the end of it was around the time of the dot-com boom. And it was a very exciting time. I ended up switching to computer science and joined the working world as a software developer. So I then went through the dot-com bust and did a bunch of different roles, technical training, and then I worked in consulting, primarily at ThoughtWorks as a developer and a program manager. And then around 2010, I switched over to the operations side of the business, and that was to start an entry-level program, and we had a big focus on diversity. So it was focused primarily in the U.S., and I really fell in love with the operations side of the business in terms of how the business ran. I was then on sort of a fast track leadership development program, and that culminated in me taking on a P&L ownership role where I ran our North America business as the managing director. And then in 2018, I took on the talent officer role. It was the first chief talent officer at ThoughtWorks, and I've been doing that ever since. And somewhere in the middle there for a few years when we were a public company, I had a dual role as chief operating officer, but now I'm back to focusing on talent full time.
Wow, you have had quite the journey. And obviously you've been with the firm for a long time, right? But let's take it back because obviously I think it's super interesting, particularly now thinking about women in technology, but you started your career as a software developer. What drew you into that?
It started from a very early age. So my father was an engineer. I've always loved math and science. And I feel very fortunate because unlike a lot of women my age, I was actually encouraged to go into engineering. And then in the dot-com boom era, it was a very exciting time. You know, you saw the internet really reaching the business world and literally reshaping how businesses were run, how they conducted, how they interface with their customers. And I was just drawn to this intersection of, you know, the very kind of geeky technical field.
Yeah.
And that was becoming more and more important and relevant to the business and to the broader world.
Yes. And so poignant, I think, in terms of the space that you then went into and obviously how that formed your whole career. It's really interesting. And I think really nice in terms of obviously having that encouragement, because you're right, not many, I think nowadays maybe more so, but less so back when you were coming into the world of work, I guess it just wasn't as common. And I think females weren't pushed into it as much. So I'm glad that you were.
Yes, me too.
Did that time shape your, like, obviously you were coming in into technology, and I think leadership within technology is difficult anyway. But did that shape your leadership style?
It definitely did. The founder of ThoughtWorks called me a reluctant leader. And I think what he meant by that was I never really saw myself taking on a formal leadership role. I was really happy to be, you know, a developer and kind of a member of the team. But he noticed that I had very strong opinions and I wasn't afraid to share them.
Okay.
And he helped me understand that, you know, you can take those strong opinions and as a leader, you can actually turn them into real change.
Yeah.
So that was kind of a light bulb moment for me to say, oh, okay, I can now see, you know, that's what leaders do. And if I feel strongly about, you know, things that could be done differently, then I can kind of take up the responsibility to help make that happen.
Mm-hmm. And that's amazing and quite ironic in the sense, obviously, a reluctant leader that then goes on to be a C-level executive in a global public organization.
Yes.
Obviously, was trying to challenge you to come out of your comfort zone, I imagine, and to kind
Absolutely.
of put yourself into that. And I
Absolutely.
think really interesting in terms of the shape of your career, because you then went into actually having your own business unit and to leading that. That must have been very different from a software engineering type role. What was that like? What were your learnings during that process?
Yes, absolutely. I think, from my first leadership role into that P&L role, the biggest learning for me making the transition from technology and software into that kind of leadership role was the feedback loops of what you're doing. So, as a software developer and at Thoughtworks, we practice a practice called pair programming and test-driven development. So what that means is for test-driven development, you sit down and you write a test for how the software should behave before you write the code. And then you watch the test fail, and then you write the code, and then you watch the test pass. So we call it red
That's
bar,
so
green bar. So
interesting.
you see the red bar of the thing failing, and then you see the green bar of making that pass. So as a software developer, like the feedback loops can be really short. Like you get a lot of satisfaction and feeling of like, oh, I just built something, I just made something work. But move into leadership, those feedback cycles become really long, sometimes, weeks or months or even years. And it's really about people, and it's about, how you can kind of motivate and inspire and allocate people to doing work. And the result of that may not come much later. So that was one of the biggest transitions. And then I think the other thing was realizing that in order to be a leader, you really have to be self-aware, and you have to kind of lead and be in control of your own mind and emotions and how you react. And that really took me on a journey of self-awareness and emotional intelligence that I think it's a fantastic growth journey to go on, but it was somewhat, unique to taking on leadership roles.
Yes, absolutely. And very different, right? When it's technology, it's black and white. With a human, it's not the same. And obviously your client group and your stakeholder group, it wouldn't necessarily come back and say, yes, it's passed or failed. It doesn't work like that. So I appreciate very, very different. Was the intention always to go into C-suite? Did you think that you would be where you are today?
Definitely not. As I mentioned, becoming a reluctant leader, and then the path to get to where I am today was, not even itself intentional. For me, it really came down to saying yes. I've had the great fortune of being at ThoughtWorks for over 22 years, and we're really a culture that believes in growth and pushing yourself out of your comfort zone. And so I was afforded many different opportunities to do things that I never imagined myself doing. So the path was really just saying yes to lots of different opportunities along the way. I think I was always driven to learn. I've always wanted to have a bigger impact, and I was really fortunate to have great mentors and sponsors and people who really believed in my potential and gave me those opportunities.
Yeah, that's amazing. And it's the power of that, right? You don't realize that actually saying yes to these opportunities earlier in your career have got you to this point. And it's nice to hear that, because I think sometimes obviously there's the other side where it's like that was only my ambition and I was only going for this, whereas actually it's like actually the smaller yeses lead to
Yes.
the greater paths in some cases. And this dual role of yours, which must have been really challenging, and I'd love to hear how you were doing it, but like how did you get to that point?
So I was in the chief talent officer role, and Thoughtworks had just become a public company, and we had been without a chief operating officer for several years. So there were some areas that were kind of falling through the cracks or needed more attention. And our CEO at the time knew that I had, a strong business acumen and experience from my time as a P&L leader. So he asked me to take on this dual role for a period of time. And I always say, chief talent and operating officer is not a common title that you'll find. But if it can work at anywhere, it is at a professional services company because, the business literally is the product. So you see a lot of intersections between talent and the operations of the business, due to the nature of the business.
It must have been quite demanding, though, for you.
Yes, it was. It really came down to having an excellent team. I think in any role where you have a really broad scope and you have, a number of really different important pieces that you're responsible for, you have to have a strong leadership team that you trust, and then you have to have a good sense of, where your attention is most needed at any given time.
And I can't imagine how busy it was, especially because you're obviously in your public phase at the time, so it must have been quite full on. Just from your side, obviously that broad scope, has that influenced your leadership style along the way?
It definitely has. I think, one of the important things that emerged from being responsible for those different areas for me as a leader, it really reinforced the importance of having your talent strategy completely aligned with the business strategy. And as a public company in particular, and given the market, the tough market that we've been through in the last few years, I think, in an ideal world, when everything is going well, what's best for your people is also best for the business and vice versa. And some of the toughest times were when that wasn't the case. And then we had to kind of weigh and debate, as a leadership team about what we needed to do and why and how we were going to bring people along on that journey.
Yeah, I can imagine it. Hard to wear both hats. I think the talent side sometimes seen different as a different area to operations, right? But actually, you're so right. It underpins everything. So I think if you're getting the strategy right, naturally it will play into to what you're doing. You touched upon it there, and you've been through many iterations of business. While you've been at Thoughtworks, you've been through an IPO process, you've obviously gone through the private equity side, and you've just taken them back private. So I would love to hear a bit more about that, because I imagine it's been that's been a big part of your like every role that you've had.
Absolutely. Yeah, those transitions can be really challenging for a company. And I think each one of them has different, sort of challenges or pros and cons. I think going public for us was a really big change. The biggest one was that we always historically had a very open and transparent culture. We would share, the full financial details of the company with everyone. And obviously that's not something you can do as a public company. So trying to navigate, how can we maintain a culture of transparency? What can we share with employees? And how can we, make sure that we're doing as much as we can within, the regulations and requirements of being a public company?
Yeah, of course, it comes with its own challenges in its own right, right? And you touched upon the market there as well. Market conditions obviously influence everything when you're a public company, and I think it's people don't quite understand the what that is and what that takes when you're in a C-level role. I think you must have worked with many CEOs off the back of obviously your tenure with Thoughtworks, and I imagine your relationship with CEOs is hugely important in terms of what you do. How has that been in terms of navigating those different relationships?
Yeah, it's absolutely critical. So in my time at ThoughtWorks, we've had four CEOs, and I've reported directly to the last two of them. And every single one of them had a very different style. And so it's really important that as a C-level executive, you get to understand, the strengths and priorities of the CEO. And then, from a talent perspective, understanding how the executive leadership team needs to round that out, and where that CEO might need to be complemented or where they really need strength on the bench of the leadership team. The other thing that we tried to do is, obviously creating clear expectations between a C-level role and the CEO is critical. But the piece that people typically miss or don't go deep enough in is establishing a shared definition of success. And this is, I mean, this is true for any manager role, right? But it's really critical at the C-level, is that, you know, you could walk away from an expectation setting conversation feeling like the two of you, you know, have a shared definition of success. But in reality, you know, if that's not really explicit, you may find yourself down the road and, you know, having that kind of misalignment or misunderstanding about, you know, where you are meant to be going.
And so important when you're putting that out to your team to then deliver that on a global scale from a talent perspective. If you're not aligned, it must be so difficult. Touching on obviously talent leadership culture, let's think about your role in a bit more detail and what these things mean to you and I guess how you've learned through your own experiences, I imagine, along the way. But leadership, purpose, values, I know these are all things that are really important to you. And I know that you really love this as a topic.
I do.
And this is kind of what brought you into your talent role at ThoughtWorks, right? This is how we got here. So how do you help your leaders? And a bit like you were just saying there with the CEO relationship, like that's a leadership relationship. How do people manage that?
Yeah, I think purpose and values and culture is a topic that I love dearly. And I really think that the reason is it's the difference between good companies and great companies. And as leaders, you know, everyone, every single person wants to have a sense of purpose in their work. And it's our job as leaders to define the purpose of the organization and then align the people within the organization to that purpose. There's a couple of examples that I love. I just finished reading Gary Ridge's new book. He's the former CEO of WD-40. And what really struck me is this is, you know, WD-40 is a machine lubricant, right?
Yeah.
And
But
but
everyone
they
knows
have,
what it is.
yeah, they have a really strong culture and sense of engagement, and their purpose, you know, I won't get it exactly right, but it's articulated as something like they want to create positive, lasting memories in all of their relationships. And that means, you know, their relationships with each other, with their suppliers, with their customers. And I just thought that was really powerful that this, you know, machine lubricant company, that they had the sense of purpose. And, you know, another one that's always stuck with me just because of its simplicity. So Indeed, which is, you know, the kind of job search board, their purpose is to help people get jobs, you know, really, really simple and really straightforward, but it's something that people can really connect to and they can see, you know, the work they're doing every day and how it leads to a bigger purpose. So I think sometimes people think that your purpose has to be, you know, saving the world. It doesn't, but it does have to have a meaningful impact on people. And it has to be something that makes people excited to get out of bed every morning and come to work. So that's purpose, and purpose is really a collective thing. It's something that you join to become a part of. It's not an individual thing. It's a collective thing. But values are slightly different because people have personal values, and then a company has values. And so the goal is to really create alignment between, you know, how the business creates value for its customers and the values of the company, and then the personal values of the employees. And that when you get that, that's really where the magic happens. For individuals, there's a bunch of tools out there that can help you uncover your values. A lot of people don't know. If you ask them, you know, what are your core personal values, they wouldn't be able to articulate it. One tool that I've recently been really into is it's called the Values Bridge. It was created by Susie Welch. I've found it to be a really fantastic tool. For leaders, it's about, you know, how do we articulate who we want to be as a company? What's our purpose? What are the values that we want to have and that help us create value for our customers? And then how do we attract and retain people whose values align with that?
Yeah. And it's so, I think the purpose thing is a bit lost at the moment. And I don't know if that's because everybody is so caught up in obviously revenue, how do we manage this market? And so, but automatically you kind of lose that sense of purpose from a business. And obviously I get to talk to a lot of execs, but also a lot of sea level minus one and two. And I think that's kind of been a common theme for the last couple of years. And so I guess kind of pulling it back to purpose is quite important.
Yeah, it really is. I think it is hard. It's hard to keep focus on in a tough market, which we've certainly been through in the technology industry the last few years. We're just undergoing a lot of change and uncertainty. But I think the companies that pull through are the ones that really hold on to that and reach to their purpose. There's a great HBR article. I think it's called Theory of the Firm, and it's about how at different points in its history, they use Disney as a real case study and how, the core way they create value is through storytelling, through telling stories that people connect to. And so it talks about how, they kind of lost touch with that at a certain point in their history. And when they reconnected with that is when they kind of got the business back on track. So even though it's hard in a tough market, it's so important because it brings you back to the reason that you exist, right? And the reason that you create value.
And it's a bit like you said, people have to feel that purpose to get out of bed in the morning. Like, it's like, remember why your people are here, and that's also really important for them to feel that too. Equally, you have to feel it yourself, right? It's as you say,
Absolutely.
it's not always easy. You've been awarded previously for what you've done for diversity in the technology space, and that's amazing. And I'm really proud of you for doing that for us. But in terms of, and I know that this is something you're passionate about as well, but thinking a lot around diversity within technology in particular, how can we help support and move the needle in this space?
Yeah, great question. It is a topic I'm very passionate about, and I think we're really proud at Thoughtworks that this has been a part of our journey for at least 50, going back 15 years. I think the lessons that we have from that journey, and it has been a bumpy ride. It has not been perfect, and definitely we're not done. But the things that really stood out in terms of lessons learned, I think number one, there has to be commitment from the top. Those senior leaders have to be committed and accountable to driving change. Otherwise, it's just not going to happen. That's step number one. And then a few things that really worked for us, having measurable goals really helps provide focus. So what exactly are your priorities and what are you hoping to do? And then really challenging the thinking and the perceived constraints about the way that things have always been done. So I'll just give you an example. In 2010, when I started that entry-level program with a focus on diversity, one of the things we did was we really challenged where we were looking for talent. So for a software developer role, we were only going to campus and looking in the computer science department. So one of the things we did was branch out a little bit and look into kind of adjacent areas of study. So we found
Great.
biology majors who maybe coded a website, for fun on the side. We even had music majors that fell into that. So just that simple, rethinking the constraints and where you're looking for talent was a big game changer for us. And then the last piece I'll mention is just if you really are committed to having a diverse and inclusive culture, you really have to get comfortable with being uncomfortable. Getting into those uncomfortable conversations about how different people are experiencing, their time at your company or your culture, and being open to, hearing that feedback and change. That's really important.
Yeah, and it's so true what you say. I think also sometimes you'll have ex leader that's like, oh, I can just hire this person that I've worked with before. And obviously, it's also being able to challenge that and say, well, actually, is that bringing a bit of diversity to your team? And sometimes it is, but not always. And again, it's obviously if it stems from the top, then great. I think it helps to drive that.
Yeah, absolutely.
What are you, when you're thinking about values and culture, and I think a lot of people are kind of feeling this as a strain across the board at the moment, but how do you then, and we kind of touched upon it a little bit, obviously you have to, there are targets to hit and revenues to hit, so there's obviously that strain, but how can you drive that in terms of keeping values alive, but also being on target?
Yeah, I think it really comes down to that operational discipline, right? And how do you establish and maintain operational discipline while staying true to your values? What I've found is that it's really important for people to have context. And it's important for all employees in the company to have a baseline understanding of how the business makes money. And then operational discipline is really being clear about, what are the drivers of our revenue and profitability? And then how does every person in the business, no matter how, what their role is or what they do day to day, how do they contribute to that? And then I think when it comes to values, I mentioned before that alignment between, the values of your company and how you create value for customers. If that alignment isn't there, it will cause constant conflict. So if you manage to create that alignment, then I think and people have the context behind how the business makes money and what those drivers are of revenue and profitability, then I think they understand the why behind the rigor and the things that you need to put in place to maintain that. So people are much more likely to meet those high expectations if they understand the reasoning behind why they exist.
So true. And I think not everybody talks about that actually. It's very true. One thing that a lot of people ask us, and this is something that I don't think anybody has the golden answer to, but in terms of obviously time management, you've ran dual roles, large public company roles. Any advice for that?
Yeah, I really think that time management and prioritization is probably the most important skill for busy executives. And it's something that I've worked at and become really good at over time. I think it starts with having very clear goals and priorities. So if you don't have clear goals and priorities, then you're kind of aimless, right? So if you have very clear goals and priorities, then the next step is I really like the Eisenhower matrix for its simplicity, the urgent and important, and then really looking at those tasks that are either on your plate or where you'd like to spend time and categorizing them. And then you have to be really ruthless that you only spend your time on the things that are important. I also think delegation is really key for leaders. So one of the things I often ask myself, like on a regular basis, are what are the things that only I can do versus what my team can do? So maybe I can only do them because of my position in the leadership team or because of a skill or capability I have, or a relationship I have. So understanding what those things are, and that's where you need to spend your time. So if someone on my team can do something, 70 or 80% as well as I can, then I try to take that as an opportunity for growth and coaching them to get through that. It allows the people on your team to grow. It also frees up time, to focus on the things that only you can do. And then the last piece is I am very vigilant about my calendar. So I use my calendar to manage how I use my time. I, look at what meetings are on my calendar, and I also do time blocking. So I do time block, deep thinking or working time, and also time that I want to spend with my family. Yeah, every executive assistant I've ever worked with gets frustrated because I refuse to relinquish control of my calendar. I just really believe that how you spend your
I
time,
get that.
it's the most important indicator of how you're going to perform as a leader.
I totally get that. I don't think I could ever fully hand it over. You need some control. The world is slightly AI crazy at the moment, and I know that this has been at the forefront of a lot of what you've done. Obviously, coming from a technology background, I appreciate, obviously, it's interesting to you as well. And what I really love is you launched something called the AI Skills Festival, which I don't know when this was and if you were kind of in the period of the craziness of AI that we're going through right now, but would love to hear all about it.
Yeah, it was just last month. We're in an industry. I mean, everyone's job and everyone's industry is being affected in some way by the AI transformation, but we're in the technology industry, and so there's huge disruption that is happening. And it's when I talk to, the senior technologists in our company that are trying to stay on top of this and understand how it's emerging and then And then we go even a step further. We really want to be thought leaders, and we want to be shaping the trends and helping our clients understand them. So when I talked to our most senior technologists, they said, yeah, it's really hard to keep up because things are just changing so fast. One of the things they mentioned was, you know, they didn't use these words, but in learning and development, we talk about the 70-20-10 model, which says that, you know, 70% of your learning happens by doing, 20% is social learning, and 10% is formal learning. So we really latched on to that 20%, which was they're saying, you know, I have people in my network that I learn from, or, you know, we're kind of learning together because it's changing so quickly. So it was kind of born of this idea of the AI festival being a way for people to learn together from each other. And we had 100 different presentations across the globe. So it was presentations from people working in the field and really just sharing their experience. You know, I experimented with this tool. Here's something we did for my client. It was all very real world, tangible examples that people could take away rather than, you know, just trying to read about or do some formal learning. So it went over really well. We've shared a few of the talks on our YouTube channel, but it was a huge success and something that I think we'll probably repeat in the future.
Yeah, amazing. That's obviously great in terms of the social element as well. It brings everybody together under that kind of cultural piece that obviously we've talked about too. Thinking about curiosity and continuous learning. And again, I know that this is something that we've talked about just generally as you and I have chatted, but how can this help people obviously in this world of AI and change that we're in right now?
Yeah, this is something we talk a lot about. Curiosity is one of our core values at ThoughtWorks. And remember, I spoke earlier about aligning your core values to how the business creates value for customers. So this is intentional. Curiosity is a value at ThoughtWorks because we've always been at the forefront of technology. And we've always had this goal of revolutionizing the IT industry. And to us, that means, you know, doing real work, real world work with clients to find new and better ways of doing things and then sharing our learnings with the world. And our clients really value that perspective we bring. So we've always looked to hire people who are passionate about learning and curious, because we need them to be, you know, constantly sort of reskilling and learning new technologies. So that as a core value is serving us really well in this era of AI and where everything is changing on a daily basis. And I think as leaders too, it's really important. I think good leaders are never done learning, whether that's about, you know, technology or leadership skills or the self-awareness, you know, that's required to be a great leader. So I think in this day and age of such rapid change, that curiosity is important for everyone.
Yes, I agree. And I'm going to take all of these references after and make sure that I've either read them or listened to them. I like an audio book when I'm commuting. Thinking of the younger generation, obviously people starting in tech today, it's more common than ever, which is great. But what would you ask the younger generation or suggest that they focus on thinking about technology in particular?
Yeah, I think we're really trying to understand, you know, how is AI going to change the world of work and the skills required and what is going to be important for people in the workforce. One recommendation I have to add to your audiobook list is a book called More Human. I really love this book, and it talks about how if we do it right, then AI can actually enable us to spend more of our time on the things that are uniquely human. So humans are still better at relationships and dealing in emotion and communication and creativity. And so if we are able to view AI, you know, not as a threat, but as an enabler to allow us to focus on what makes us human, that I think is the future. And so if I were talking to someone kind of early in their career or someone just starting out in tech, I think the capabilities that are going to be really important in the future are those things that make us human. Critical thinking is one of the biggest ones that we see. You know, these models, you know, they hallucinate, they produce things that are not always of the best value. And so, you really have to be able to think critically about, you know, what it is we're trying to accomplish and does this make sense and what are, you know, the right next questions to ask so that you can really dig in and validate that. And then lastly, I think, you know, focusing on the skills around human relationships, understanding, you know, how to collaborate with people, how to lead people, and understand people as individuals. Those are going to continue to be really critical skills, you know, as people enter the workforce.
Yeah. And we've touched upon it throughout this conversation, but in terms of leadership, obviously that is a skill that I think is a great one to work on just personally. But as you've kind of gone through your career, you've obviously developed your own leadership style. And I think we're all slightly different in terms of how that works. But what would you say is your leadership style? But also, have you learned these things or has that come naturally to you?
That's a great question. I think as a leader, I blend, so on one side, very rational, systemic thinking, and on the other side, the emotional and human side of leadership. So for me, the first part came very naturally, and that's because of my engineering background. Mm-hmm. So when you go through engineering studies, you're trained to think about complex systems, how to solve problems, how to analyze data, how to identify hypotheses that you can mm-hmm. test through the scientific method. So I still use those skills every day. Mm-hmm. And they're, you know, they're incredibly helpful as a C-level executive. The other side, the emotional intelligence side and the human relationship side, that I have built over time. Mm-hmm. And that has been, you know, through intentional learning, a lot of coaching and mentoring, mm-hmm. observing other leaders, and just the hard-earned experience of trial yeah. and error and getting it right and getting it wrong.
Yeah. Yeah. I think, as you say, certain things come naturally and certain things you certainly try and improve along the way. And I don't think we ever get it completely right either. I think it's a learning process for everybody.
Absolutely.
What's the biggest leadership lesson that you have learned along the way?
For me, it's that truth and authenticity, they win every time. You know, people, when they're listening to a leader, they intuitively know when they're not being told the whole story. Mm-hmm. And people also intuitively connect to and respond to authenticity and vulnerability. So while the message may be hard to hear sometimes, mm-hmm. and I think I've learned the hard way that, you know, if you're trying to lead people through difficult times, that radical candor and, you know, showing your vulnerability, it's really the only way to truly connect with people.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree. And do you know what? It is always a common theme throughout these episodes, which I'm pleased about. Everybody's saying, like, if you're not authentic, it's quite obvious. And that is what helps you become a great leader. Mm-hmm. Final question. I can't believe we're almost at the end, but in terms of legacy, we always talk about this on the podcast. What do you hope your legacy will be, particularly thinking about obviously your role within technology and talent?
I think two things come to mind. So I do hope that part of my legacy is changing the diversity and the inclusivity of the tech industry. It's something I'm very passionate about. Mm-hmm. And I also hope that my legacy is creating cultures that really, truly value people mm-hmm. and creating environments where people can, you know, achieve self-actualization. So where they can be challenged and they can grow into the best version of themselves mm-hmm. In ways that they never thought were possible. And I think that if you can create that for employees, it actually in the end makes your business really strong. So that whole idea of creating those cultures where people can truly thrive and feel a sense of belonging and purpose, I hope that's my legacy.
That's amazing. And thank you so much for sharing. I think there is so much learning that people will take from this. I've certainly got lots of bits of reading to do, but also a lot of insight that I'll take and we'll share with the team here and we'll get them to listen to, because I think it's You've shared so much from a powerful perspective, particularly thinking about purpose. And I think sometimes in current circumstance, it's easy to forget about that. And so thank you so much for sharing, Joanna. You've been on
Yes.
a great journey.
Thank you so much, Terry. It's been an honor and really enjoyed our talk.
Yes, thank you.